Hey, let's go on a Monday, December 15th, 2025. Ryan Armani, JR Afternoon. Brian Moore, Danielle Mason, Dominic Ballantini in the house across the glass. A first for me today, ladies and gentlemen. I am doing the show remotely, away from the team, which, man, let me tell you, technology is amazing. Sick kid, wife not feeling good. And let me tell you, I took the morning off from Fox 2 this morning to help out over here. And a special shout out to the best engineers in the business. Ray Templin, Dave Rieger got me set up yesterday. Ray Templin came to the house and made sure that I was perfectly crystal clear. I'm not sure how it sounds, but hopefully it sounds good over there to you, ladies and gentlemen. But what a busy news day it is. And listen, a lot of sad news today. Three major stories gripping the nation today. First and foremost, the latest news regarding Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle. The 32-year-old son of Rob and Michelle Reiner is under arrest. Nick Reiner is being held at Parker Center Jail in downtown Los Angeles. His bail is set for $4 million. Now, last night, so much shock, absolute shock, to learn that the actor, director, political activist Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle were killed. Initial reports from the LAPD suggested that there were two people found dead at a home owned by Reiner, and the two people were 78 and 68, a 78-year-old male and a 68-year-old female, which were the exact ages of Rob and his wife, Michelle. And then later in the evening, the LAPD confirmed that it was in fact Rob and Michelle that were investigated as a homicide. The reports that the two suffered stab wounds. Their daughter, Rami, found the bodies after first responders arrived at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Now, their son, Nick, has openly shared his struggles with addiction. And meanwhile, tributes are pouring in from all over. It was just absolutely shocking news. The images of Billy Crystal coming up to the home and crying, Larry David coming up to the home and crying, beautiful tributes from just about everybody that knew him, that loved his work. And even if you didn't love the political activism, as a human being alone, the manner in which he was allegedly killed by his son is just something that is unimaginable. Now, a part of this story, as is just the case these days, President Trump has said a lot of things that he probably shouldn't say. But this one is near the top, in my opinion. Just an absolutely terrible statement by President Trump about two people that were just murdered, allegedly, by their own son. And the statement reads, a very sad thing happened. He posted this on Truth Social. A very sad thing happened last night in Hollywood. Rob Reiner, a tortured and struggling, but once very talented movie director and comedy star, has passed away together with his wife, Michelle, reportedly due to the anger he caused others through his massive, unyielding, and incurable affliction with the mind-crippling disease known as Trump Derangement Syndrome, sometimes referred to as TDS. He was known to have driven people crazy by his raging obsession of President Donald J. Trump, with his obvious paranoia reaching new heights as the Trump administration surpassed all goals and expectations of greatness, and with the golden age of America upon us, perhaps never like never before. May Rob and Michelle rest in peace. To me, that is just truly abhorrent for the President of the United States to say that about Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle, less than 12 hours after, or less than 24 hours after being killed in a gruesome manner by allegedly by their son. I'm just not sure why he would say anything remotely close to that. I know Rob Reiner has said some horrible things about the president. I know he was among his staunchest critics, but my goodness, can we not be better than that? I saw that today. I was thinking about not even bringing it up because it was just so gross to me. And look, I talked to a couple of Trump supporters today that even were like, what in the world is he doing? He just can't get out of his own way. We'll take some calls on this later on in the show. Hour number two of the show is going to be, I've opened up a couple of segments because I do want to talk to people about just what's happening in the world. I mean, this news last night as well about the father and son terrorists that killed 15 people. Nearly 40 others were hurt at a Hanukkah event on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. Hundreds of people were gathered to celebrate the first day of Hanukkah. And, you know, this person who's being hailed a hero, did you see the video of this? The guy in the white shirt, as I call him, is that a lot of people are calling him. Well, his name is Ahmed El Ahmed, 43 years old, a fruit stand owner. He can be seen hiding behind a car and then coming from behind and tackling one of the gunmen and wrestling the gun away. Now, he had a shot, but maybe he didn't want to take it. I don't know if the gun jammed. I've not heard what happened at that point, but he wrestled the gun away. He did not kill the guy. He did not even shoot the guy. Who knows what his mindset was there, but as that was going down, the son in this father-son duo then shoots Ahmed from the bridge. He got hit in the upper arm and the hand. He did undergo surgery and is recovering. Now, the father who died, one of the terrorists' father who died after being shot by police, was an immigrant who stayed in the country on various visas. The son was on the radar of authorities for his association with members of a Sydney-based cell of Islamic State terror group. Now, no charges were brought on the son at the time. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he'll introduce new safety measures to protect the Jewish population. I'm not sure what that means, but critics say he has not done enough. Now, coming up next, we're going to talk to Rabbi Asher Lopatin. He is a community relations director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Ann Arbor. We're going to talk about this shooting. And just look, we had the lighting of the menorah in the D last night. Anti-Semitism is up, if you ask, I believe over 50% of in a recent poll that I saw, of Jewish people said they have experienced anti-Semitism in the last year. So we'll talk to the rabbi about this, the latest on the Brown University shooting, the Lions. It's a Men's Health Monday. We've got a lot to get to. We'll get to it all coming up throughout the next 2 hours. Glad to have you along here. Don't go anywhere. 760 WJR. 760 WJR, right back here on a Monday. Some tragic news. Over the weekend, a father and son terrorists killed 15 people and nearly 40 others were injured at a Hanukkah event on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia. And I wanted to talk about this because I saw a poll earlier regarding the Jewish people. 50% of Jewish people, according to the poll that I saw, have experienced anti-Semitism in the past year. And 8 in 10 Jewish people are worried about violence against other Jewish people, even themselves, in America. So to help us talk about it, Rabbi Asher Lopatin is the Community Relations Director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Ann Arbor. Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us here on 760 WJR. First and foremost, my condolences for the Jewish community and what everybody experienced yesterday in Australia.
Well, thank you so much. And your support means a lot. Your condolences mean a lot. And, you know, I've gotten messages from people in the Hindu community and the Muslim community and Christians, you know, everyone really reaching out. It's a tragedy. And yet, I think it was avoidable if Australia would have cracked down more and condemned the hateful language that are going on in protests all the time. And it's all over the world. And this hateful language of killing, of not just kill the Jews, of fury spilled out, venom spilled out against the Jewish state, an obsession of anger and fury that's gripping the whole world, like Eurovision even, like, for some reason, you know, this is more important than anything in the world. And that sets the stage for crazy people to go out and not care if they're killing a 10-year-old girl, if they're killing old people, Holocaust, or they don't care. But it's avoidable if the community would really condemn this kind of speech. And they didn't hear it yet, that condemnation in Australia. Yeah, they condemn killing, but they don't condemn the speech that enables it.
And you know what? That's exactly right, Rabbi. And look, I'm sure you heard the numbers that I gave the poll that I was referencing. 50% of Jewish people have experienced anti-Semitism in the past year alone. 8 in 10 are fearful of something happening in the Jewish community. When you hear that, what is the reason why this anti, and it's not, this is happening. Why is it happening? Yeah. It's terrible.
Well, you know, yeah, I think a lot of people are starting to say that it's a coordinated effort. Qatar is behind it. There's billions of dollars going in. Iran, even Turkey, it's a coordinated campaign. It seems like that China has had engineered, I hope it gets changed, but the TikTok algorithm to spew this hatred and to, you know, push people towards an anti-Semitic and a demonization of Israel. It's not criticizing Israel's policy or whatever, but demonization. And China is doing it because it's disruptive of America in general, in the Western world. And Iran is doing it because they are madly obsessed to destroy Israel. And Qatar is affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood and with Iran, and they're also obsessed with Israel. There's a tiny little country of 10 million. There are only 15 million Jews in the world, but there's this obsession. So it really feels like it's a coordinating, and they're duping people, good people, to think that this is the issue of the day. You know, Greta Thunberg, remember, she was protesting global warming. That was the existential threat to the whole world. And suddenly she gave it up and said, no, Gaza, that's the existential threat to the whole world, not global warming. So, but it does seem to be somewhat coordinated and bringing out the worst in people.
We are talking to Rabbi Asher Lopatin from the Jewish Federation of Greater Ann Arbor. And Rabbi, are you worried about copycats here in this country? We just had the Menorah in the D event last night, the lighting of that beautiful event. Are you worried about that? What can people do, to make sure they're safe? Because I have to imagine people do not feel safe right now.
Well, the first thing is to show up and to be there. And I was at the Menorah in the D and many other people. It was a great crowd. Before that, actually, in the morning, I went to synagogue for my prayers. Then I went to church, a wonderful church where the pastor was, Pastor Clanton was retiring. And there was a Christian woman, one of the leaders, who wears a Star of David. And she says she's going to wear that until the last hostage body is returned. Let's be in solidarity with each other. Let's show up. Let's show that we are not afraid. You know, I feel after Charlie Kirk's assassination, you know, are people afraid if they speak up, whatever side they're on, the left, the right, conservative, you know, liberal? No, we cannot be afraid. So we're afraid, we're scared, but we can't let that slow us down. And I want whoever is obsessed with this, the people that hate, the people that are intolerant, to know that it's only going to encourage us to be more Jewish And for the vast majority of Jews who love Israel and feel that we need a Jewish state in the world, it's only going to make us more pro-Israel. So, you know, it's going to backfire, but it's really very, it's disturbing. And it's disturbing how people allow for it. You know, I heard, I heard that there were some commemorations just yesterday, I guess, or maybe today, for in Europe, for those who were killed. And there are protesters that interrupted that. This is, it's this evil
it's
obsession.
Insane.
That,
it's complete,
yeah, it's insane.
Complete insanity. Rabbi, let me ask you about college campuses and in their, just here in this country, and they're seemingly turning a blind eye to anti-Semitism. You had mentioned just the fact that Australia really hasn't denounced that type of language as a country,
right,
and have allowed it to simmer and simmer and simmer. And it's almost like a boiling pot of water. At some point, it's going to boil over if you don't get out in front of it. What is your stance on college campuses and the ability to really, and it's not free speech to say, kill the Jews. That's not free speech.
Right.
That's hate speech. And
yeah,
it seems like more and more colleges and universities allow it.
Yeah. And they, first of all, they allow it. And if they're private university, they could definitely stop it. And the other thing is, well, if you have some crazy person that wants to protest, whatever, they intolerance, but don't let them go into the library. And if they do, and they disturb other students, they need to be punished. They need to be expelled. If they have an encampment, you know, that's not tolerated. And so it's the speech that is not condemned. First of all, it's not condemned by these student unions. All the student unions that's in Michigan and others, like, they all care about boycott Israel. I mean, that's the most important issue of the day. Instead of saying, like, we do not accept any group that has hate speech. So, you know, it's time for the universities to, I know they're getting a lot of money from Qatar, billions of dollars, and it's very hard for them to stand up to anti-Semitism or hate of Zionists. You know, I'm not saying you want to be a non-Zionist or whatever, that's whatever your business, but this hatred of anyone who's a Zionist, and the vast majority of Jews are, that's unacceptable. So universities have to be the adult in the room and tell these college students that this kind of disruptiveness and behavior is not tolerated and is not acceptable.
No question about it. Rabbi, we cannot thank you enough for your time. I really appreciate the conversation. I hope to continue it with you at some point, sir. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your concern
and happy
and
Hanukkah
kind
as
words.
Well.
Happy Hanukkah and happy holidays and Merry Christmas.
You got it. All right, we're coming right back. Dan Miller is going to join us, the voice of the Detroit Lions. We're talking Lions football. What chance do they have in three games? Can they make it? We'll let you know. Dan Miller checks in with us. Coming up next, 760 WJR. Lions lose to the Rams 41-31 yesterday in Los Angeles. Playoff hopes are fading. After yesterday's game, tough game for them, no doubt, but this is what they're facing. They still have a path, and a pretty good one, first and foremost. They've got to win all three games, versus Pittsburgh, at Minnesota, at Chicago. And you're really looking at the Bears to lose two of their last three games, one of which would be against the Lions. But the Bears play Green Bay. They play at San Francisco. Tough path for them. The Packers, there's a road to get to the playoffs through the Packers as well. They have three games left. Just lost Micah Parsons. They play at Chicago versus Baltimore and at Minnesota, which looked good yesterday, at Dallas. Can it be done? Sure. Will it? We don't know, but that's why they play the games. The voice of the Detroit Lions, Dan Miller, joins us now, Fox 2 sports director as well. Dan, how you doing, my friend? Thanks for the time, buddy.
I'm good. What's going on, Ryan?
Well, I still believe, Dan, and I just do. But it starts with winning some football games consecutively. Look, three in a row they got to win. All these scenarios – they don't mean anything if the Lions don't take care of business. What do you make of where they are with three games to go?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is. You're looking for consistency within those games in this up and down period that they've been on now for 7 or 8 weeks. They've played well at times, but it hasn't been good enough. And, you know, you look at that first half yesterday, rock solid, and then the third quarter and early fourth, three straight three and outs. You can't do that. We knew possessions were going to be gold against this team. So, you know, to stack consecutive wins, you got to get back to what they were doing when they did that for the past 2 years. You've got to play complementary football. Offense has to be consistent. Defense has to take the ball away, lead to the offense scoring, and that's how you kind of get the jump on teams. But it just hasn't been good enough for a couple of months. Are they capable of it? Sure. Is it getting harder now as we see more evidence that the consistency is hard to come by and these injuries continue to mount? Yeah, it's more difficult, but this is the hand you've been dealt. There's no choice.
Dan, I can't remember a single game where the Lions looked really good in one half and then not so good in the second half. I mean, I believe it was 20 straight points that LA had scored at one point in the game. Lions looked unstoppable offensively in that first half. And then, as you said, three straight three and outs. What happened within that game?
You know, Dan Campbell always talks about when they have the football, that when they can start a drive with a first down, get a first down, that usually gets them off and running. Coming out of the half, they're moving the ball. They get a nice run up the middle. Holding call sets them back behind the down sticks. The next drive, they get the ball, sack, you're behind the down sticks, you don't recover. And then the third drive, they just went three and out. So I saw negative plays that really hurt them on drives. And that's a hard team, if you're going to get second and 15, second and 20, something like that, to recover against, because they are very good defensively. So, look, we knew it was going to be a tough game defensively for the Lions to get stops. They got the takeaway, and you know, if you can force a couple of Rams punts, that might be as good as it gets on that day. But offensively, I think it just, you know, that third quarter and early fourth. And look, there's enough blame to go around. They needed to get more stops on defense. But the reality of it is it turned into a shootout, and the Rams just had more answers in that second half than the Lions did. When you go up by 10 and then the other team scores 20 in a row, as you alluded to, it's going to be difficult to come back, because that means you got to find some way to get Matthew Stafford off the field.
Look, we could talk till we're blue in the face about the officiating and all of that, but what did you see in the booth on that touchdown that was ruled a touchdown that wasn't a touchdown? I mean, everybody in the NFL talking about that today.
Yeah, I mean, what we saw was definitely that it looked like he was down at the one. And the only thing that I can think of is what it seems like they landed on. And the one thing that we could not get a clear view of is whether or not that ball hit the ground as he went down. As he
it
went
seems
down,
like
that
it
ball
did
seem to move. Well, if it did, that's an incomplete pass. But
right.
It was really hard to get definitive proof of that. And I think that was problem number one. And then the only thing that I can think of, number two, is that they decided that, in fact, he did bobble it and he did not regain full control until he was in the end zone. Because if you're saying it was an outright catch from the beginning, then clearly he was down at the one. That's not even an arguable point. So, you know, one, we questioned whether or not it was complete. Two, certainly thought if you were going to say complete before he went down to the ground, that he was down at the one, which we all saw, but they went with the other option, which was that even if there was a bobble, that extended the play into the end zone before he had full control of the football. In other words, you know, just think of a guy running down the sidelines, batting in the air, left, right, left, right, left, right, and doesn't get control of it until he gets in the end zone. That's ultimately what they're saying is, yeah, it was, he had his arms around it, but it wasn't fully secured when he was down at the one. And the play then extended until it was secured, which was in the end zone. But, you know,
which would have been fine.
I wish there was a replay that was a little more definitive. It was a tough one. I mean, there's a lot of other things in this game, but that, you know, in terms of officiating, definitely stood out.
No doubt. And that scenario that you just played out would have been fine. And Dean Blandino, you know, that was among the theories that he gave to when they came back from a commercial break. But nonetheless, I mean, if that was the belief by the official, then state that on the field. Don't just come back and say play stands. It seems as though the momentum, everything changed at that point. But I guess it's neither here nor there. Look, there's three games to go. Who should Lions fans root for this weekend, the Bears or the Packers?
Well, I think you're rooting for, number one, themselves. Number two,
Aaron Rodgers, right?
Yeah, you need the Bears to lose one along the way, and so that you can get them when they come into your – or you go to their place in week 18 with a chance to land them on six losses, because then you would have the tiebreaker against them, which would give you the wild card spot. So, you know, I think at this point you're clearly rooting for Chicago to lose. I have not gone through all the different machinations of what can happen if somebody – you know, beats Green Bay, but Green Bay's schedule certainly appears more friendly than the Bears does, because the Bears also have to go to San Francisco. But you're basically looking at having to win three in a row, and you're looking at Chicago needing to lose one of the next two, and then you're probably going to be in a winner-take-all game against Chicago for a wild card spot in week 18.
Yeah, let's start with a win against Pittsburgh, I guess. That's the easiest. Right?
None of this other stuff matters if they don't do that. And none of it matters if they don't find a way. And listen, Pittsburgh is not an easy team to play against right now. I mean, we'll see them tonight. But this is a team that's fighting for a division title right now. And, you know, it's not necessarily the best team in the AFC, but it's been good enough to – you know, sit atop the division and handle their business here the past couple of weeks, and we'll see where it goes. But the first things first, they just have to play better. Everything else doesn't matter if you don't play better and play more consistent football.
I appreciate you doing this with me, Dan. Thanks, buddy.
Anytime. See you, Ryan.
You got it. Dan Miller, the voice of the Detroit Lions, Fox 2 sports director here on 760 WJ. We're coming right back with Dr. Michael Lutz, the president of the Men's Health Foundation of Michigan, 760 WJR. 760 WJR. It is Monday, and that can only mean one thing. It's a Men's Health Monday. Our good friend, Dr. Michael Lutz, the president of the Michigan Men's Health Foundation, joins us now. Dr. Lutz, how are you, my friend?
Great. It's great to be here with you on this cold, cold Monday.
No doubt about that. And that's one of the things I want to talk to you about, Dr. Lutz, sickness. It seems like we're dealing with it a lot. I've got it in my house. I know it seems like everybody I talk to, they got flu or cold or something like that. One of the questions I want to ask you, how do people try their best to stay healthy in this winter months, so to speak?
Well, you know, one of those things is once you get it in your house, it's hard to not pass it all around the house. So the key thing you can do is to try and maintain as good a hygiene and limit germ exposure as best as possible. Make sure everybody's got up to date on their vaccinations, stay well hydrated, nutrition. And, you know, you just got to stay active, you know, keep your immunity boosted and your mood up as best as possible. Get outside a little bit to try and get a little bit of sunlight. I mean, those are just the best things you can do.
You talk about limit germ exposure. When you have it in your house, maybe one kid passes it to the next, the kids pass it to the parents, what have you. What are some of the best ways to limit germ exposure when it's in your house?
You know, I think we learned a lot of things from COVID, things that we never thought we'd ever have to do in our lifetime. And so there are some families that mask up in their houses just to be extra safe. But, you know, really just good hygiene, just, you know, keeping your hands clean, not touching everything in the house, you know, limiting the exposure to your own germs for other people, and not breathing in each other's space as much as possible.
How much of a factor is that hydration and electrolytes and things like that?
It's really everything. I mean, hydration is so key so that all of your organs can function at their optimum. When you get dehydrated, the key thing is your kidneys start not functioning as well. Your digestive tract doesn't work as well. And you just basically your skin dries out, starts to crack a little bit, and you can even get infections that way too. So you really have to do everything you can to stay well hydrated.
Talk to me about sore throats, coughs, nasal congestion. What are some of the best things that you can do for yourself to rid yourself of the nagging sore throat or the cough or the runny nose or things like that? And are you a fan of any of those over-the-counter medications that you walk into CVS or wherever and grab those?
Yeah, a lot of the topical sore throat remedies that have xylocaine or a numbing medicine are really helpful if your throat is incredibly sore. But things that just keep your throat soothed and hydrated, you know, without your throat getting dry are really the best things you can do. For nasal congestion, using the saline spray or saline drops to keep your nasal passages moist is really helpful and also helps fight off the bacterial infection or the viral infection as it should be spreading in that area. And just using a humidifier during the evening hours is sometimes really helpful for the kids.
And then perhaps the power of prayer. Just pray that it doesn't get over to you, right?
All the time. Yes, pray it's not you.
Exactly. No doubt about it. All right, Doc, I wanted to hit you with a couple of major injuries in the NFL yesterday. Both Patrick Mahomes and Micah Parsons tore their ACL, their anterior cruciate ligaments, yesterday. Two superstars with a somewhat common injury for athletes. But I wanted to ask you, how common is it for the everyday guy out there? I remember a couple of years ago, Derek Kevra, our Fox 2 weather authority, he tore his ACL in a pickup basketball game and had surgery. What do you know about this? What can you tell me about the ACL?
Well, you basically hit it on the head. It's that, you know, it was in basketball. So basketball, football, these sudden movements, you know, where you have that sudden stepping off of your foot. You know, last week we talked about Achilles injuries. Now it's ACL injuries. You know, now we're going on into the football season where there's getting more wear and tear. So these are really common in sports, particularly now with weekend athletes. But even if you're like stepping off of a ladder or stepping downstairs the wrong way, you might feel a sudden pop and that could be it. It's something that's more common in women than in men. Don't know the reason why, but two of my daughter-in-laws are good examples of that happening because they both had their ACLs injured and repaired. So it's about a 4% incidence in the general population, particularly in sports, football injuries. But again, higher incidence in female athletes.
Is surgery necessary if you're a non-athlete?
You know, depending on the extensiveness of the injury. If it's mild, absolutely not. If it's major, you might have to go ahead and have surgery because you're going to have significant instability of the knee joint. So you can try some physical therapy, and a lot of times we'll actually have you do that first before your surgical procedure to get you ready, to get you trained for what you'll be experiencing afterwards. But the reconstruction is pretty much standard fare for most people. The question is whether you're going to have an autograft or an allograft. And that's really the question for a lot of people, depending upon how active you are.
The timetable for a return on an ACL, you know, with these athletes, it seems like this is one of those injuries that you suffer, that athletes really do come back. That is granted if you have one. I've seen athletes have two and fall off, but I've seen athletes have ACL injuries and they come back better than ever.
Well, you know, the athletes have these customized physical therapy protocols that they follow.
Exactly.
And they're monitored incredibly closely. The rest of us would not have that kind of coverage or experience. So in general, it would take about 8 to 12 months for the general person to recover fully. And they do recover quite fully from this, unlike the Achilles tendon rupture that we talked about last week, where they never seem to ever get back to their peak potential again. But after an ACL injury, these people get back to full activity, and their risk of a re-injury is less than 20%.
We are talking to Dr. Michael Lutz, the president of the Michigan Men's Health Foundation. Dr. Lutz, just side note to the men's health conversation, I took my dog for a walk this morning. And I can't tell you how often I slipped on ice outside. Thankfully, I didn't fall. But just a cautionary tale about sudden movements and how you can really do some damage to yourself as well on these icy surfaces.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes it's not the fall. It's the sudden movement and the catching of yourself to stop the fall that actually causes some of the injury. And so, you know, these slippery surfaces are really risky. So you really have to wear the proper shoes when you go out in this slippery weather to really avoid the ice and ice patches. And, you know, whenever I walk my dog, I use my dog as kind of like the tester, like a mind tester. She'd go out there in front of me. And if she started to slip, I knew I had to be careful in that area.
Well, let me tell you, it was the dog that probably saved me from going down, holding on to that leash. Dr. Lutz, we appreciate you, my friend. Thanks so much. I enjoy these conversations, and we learn a lot. Hopefully, our listeners do as well. We'll talk to you again next week. Dr. Michael Lutz, president of the Michigan Men's Health Foundation, MichiganMen'sHealthFoundation.org, if you would like to learn more about that organization. We are coming right back. Top of hour number two. We are also going to open up the phone lines and take your calls at 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. Lots to get to on a Monday. Busy news day. We'll get you all caught up. Top of the hour here. You are locked and loaded. 760 WJR. Hour number two of the program here on 760 WJR. I just wanted to hear a little bit more of my theme music. Why not? There you go. Sounding good on a Monday. Ryan Urbani, Brian Morton, Danielle Mason, Dominic Valentini in the house across the glass. Guys, we'll get right to it. Look, in hour number two here, what I really want to do is talk to you. 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. And one of the things that I want to do today, you know, when we thinking about the show constantly, and I thought about Saturday night, Erica Kirk was on CBS and did a town hall with Barry Weiss, the new president, CEO, editor-in-chief of CBS News. And I was intending on talking about that. And then all of a sudden, you know, Rob Reiner happened, Australia happened, Brown University happened. The Michigan stuff is going on still. The Lions, I mean, there's just so much news to get to. And on the heels of the Erica Kirk, Barry Weiss, a conversation about how we need to tone down the rhetoric, how we need to be more compassionate, how we need to be better human beings. I wanted to talk to Trump supporters today about Donald Trump and what we are seeing today play out right before our eyes. You know the story by now, the 32-year-old son of Rob and Michelle Reiner under arrest. Nick Reiner is being held at the Parker Center Jail in downtown Los Angeles with his bail set at $4 million. Just absolute shock and horror that we learned that Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle had their necks sliced. And it was apparently done, allegedly, by their son Nick. Yesterday, their daughter, Rami, found the bodies. First responders arrived at about 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Their son, Nick, had openly shared his struggles with addiction. Just a terrible story. I think anybody who heard this news yesterday, who knows anything about Rob Reiner, who saw his films, that watched him on the small screen or the big screen, or cared for his politics or didn't care about his politics. He was very politically active. I think if everyone is sad about what had happened to him. But then you see this statement by President Trump today, and I just think it is absolutely abhorrent, completely unnecessary, totally gross, and obviously unnecessary in every other adjective you can describe. Here's what he posted on Truth Social earlier this morning about the tragic death of Rob and Michelle Reiner. Quote, "A very sad thing happened last night in Hollywood. Rob Reiner a tortured and struggling but once very talented movie director and comedy star has passed away, together with his wife Michelle, reportedly due to the anger he caused others through his massive, unyielding, and incurable affliction with a mind-crippling disease known as Trump Derangement Syndrome, sometimes referred to as TDS. He was known to have driven people crazy by his raging obsession of President Donald J. Trump, with his obvious paranoia reaching new heights as the Trump administration surpassed all goals and expectations of greatness, and with the golden age of America upon us, perhaps like never before. May Rob and Michelle rest in peace. Again, just totally unnecessary and mean, cruel. What this family is going through is unimaginable. And I just want to ask Trump's, I never want to limit my calls to one segment of the listening group, but for Trump supporters specifically, I want to know what you think of this statement. I want to know if you believe statements like this diminish or throw a wrench in any good that you perceive him to be doing. For all the policy people out there, I'm wondering if there's anything that you have to say today for this, because again, I think it does throw a wrench into a lot of good that he potentially could do. I think it makes people feel a certain way about him that is just, if nothing else, it's one of those, come on, dude. Seriously, today, this is the time that you are going to pick to hammer a man and his wife that apparently had their neck sliced, and allegedly it was done by their son. 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. And I basically just want to have a conversation about where we are as a country. I mean, there is so many negative things happening today alone. Forget about the time we're in. Today alone, it feels like a really, really tough news day. You have the terrorism in Australia. We also have the Brown University shooting, which I didn't even get to. The Brown University, late last night, the person of interest in Brown University was released, turning the case back into a manhunt. Stunning developments there in Rhode Island. Authorities there say they had the wrong guy, and the gunman responsible for killing two students and injuring nine other students at the engineering and physics building. Police admitted that the person they detained yesterday was not the person that was seen in the surveillance video that was shown yesterday. He is not the guy leaving the scene of that crime. Recent evidence and lab testing pointed them in a different direction, and the Providence mayor saying even though the murderer is still on the loose, they will not be reinstating the shelter-in-place order, but they will increase security. Seems like a completely botched investigation at that point. They held a suspect. I would hope that despite detaining somebody yesterday, questioning a person of interest, that investigation was still ongoing. I can only hope that was the case. Brian, Russ, John, everybody on hold, stay right there. I've got a couple of open lines, 800-859-0WJR. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, we will get right to your phone call, straight to the phones, 800-859-0WJR. Quick break, and then right back, 760-WJR. I think it's safe to say a lot of people, and I just did another quick glance online to see what some of the other conservative commentators are saying about the president's statement regarding Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle. Just really, really terrible statement that the president put out. And I'm wondering if it diminishes anything good that he's doing at the White House. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. And for this segment, I would like to talk to Trump supporters. I never want to put a cap on who I'm talking to, but I feel like I know what the Democratic voters are going to say about this statement. I'm curious to really get a sense of where Trump supporters are with this, because I have not found one person actually that thought it was a good idea to press send on that statement. Let me get to the phone lines and get to Brian in Macomb. You're on 760 WJR. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, I can't necessarily, well, I can't call myself a Republican, but I can, you know, I can be an independent. Well, I consider myself an independent, and I can find middle ground. So that's as close as you get to this phone call of being a Republican.
But that's great. I think independent. Look, I think independents too. Independents that can go either way are important to talk to. Yes,
right.
But go ahead.
Yeah. So regarding President Trump and his statement, absolutely tone deaf. I'm sorry. It's just a complete lack of sympathy and empathy. But like I was mentioned to your car screener, you can kind of see slowly see some prominent Republicans kind of shine away and outwardly disagreeing with him. You know, the MTG and the Indiana Republican that took a stance about the redistricting and that whole state of Indiana. What the representation anyway, you know, they rejected his bid.
Yeah, right.
To redistricting.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, maybe we are slowly thawing out of the Trump, he calls it derangement. I'll call it the Trump total support and blinding to support, but you know, that's,
you know what, that's a good point. Maybe the total blind support that the president has enjoyed for so long, perhaps that's fading as a number of statements like these go by. Just don't sit well with people. Brian, thanks so much. Let me get to Russ is that Ohio? How about that?
Yep.
Russ in Ohio, my friend. Welcome.
Yeah, down here in Buckeye Land, you bet. Yeah, when I heard you start talking, I said, I hope he didn't say something stupid. And I've been a guy who's been a big supporter of Donald Trump because I respect what the man does and not what he says. And I have a lot of friends who are devout Christians, as I am myself, and they voted for Donald Trump, but they held their nose to vote for the guy because they believed in his values as far as what he was going to do in policy. And they separated that from what kind of man he was. They knew that he was not one of us. And they knew that he was kind of fake and he was just saying things and he was obnoxious. And they just kind of held their nose because they liked his policies, if that makes sense. And a lot of
absolutely.
People say,
absolutely bet, makes sense.
Yeah, a lot of people say, I don't really care what he says. I care what he does. And I've always been one of those. But this kind of stuff is getting to the point of being, I'm getting so tired of him. And getting so tired of these antics, and Republicans do not appreciate these things. We don't have these values. I think he's a one-off, though, too. As I study history, he's a one-off. There's only one Donald Trump. This does not represent the Republican Party. And you realize by next November at midterms, he's going to be pretty irrelevant.
Well,
and that's going to be the end of his.
Russ, one of the things that I want, just one of the things is I hear you talk. I think a lot of people, you make a lot of sense. I think a lot of people out there are policy people that voted on the policy and not so much the guy. And it is a binary choice. It's either this or that. And I think, you know, when a lot of people went to the polls, whether it be in November of 24 or 2020, or look, Joe Biden, he won because he wasn't Donald Trump. I mean, it's a binary choice. It's one or the other. And I just think, you know, it really shoves a foot in the face of a lot of Trump supporters, because a lot of Trump supporters today have to then go and say, oh, is this the guy you voted for? Is this what you voted for? And then you're left to defend yourself. And it's just cruel. Too, there is something about it just being plain mean. What Rob Reiner's family and friends are going through is something that you hope no other human being in the face of the earth ever has to deal with. And to kind of fly in the face of that is really ugly. Thanks so much, Russ. I'm going to get to John in North Branch. John, you're on 760 WJR.
Thank you, Ryan. I am a Trump supporter. I voted for him 3 times. I'm all in on his policies, and I can't tell you how disappointed I am with him today. He's never shown tact, and he's always attacked those who have attacked him. And I always found that to be less than presidential, you know. But in a case like this, it's just plain mean-spirited. I'm disappointed. I tell you that it has changed my belief on his policies. I still think he has America in his best interest. But he, Trump derangement is real. And part of it is driven by the things that he says and his actions when it comes to those who say anything against him. Now, I'm still going to support the guy. I'm going to support his policies, but I'm sitting here very, very disappointed. I must admit, Rob Reiner's politics. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, and I'll keep you on to finish your thought. I just want to jump in for a second. You know, what happened to Charlie Kirk, and you can disagree or agree with Charlie Kirk, but what happened to Charlie Kirk should happen to no human being ever again. And I just thought that at that point, that was a wake-up call to the rest of the country to maybe show some compassion with people in which you disagree. And I thought we could maybe get to a point, but maybe I guess not. I guess I'm just super naive or super optimistic, but also super wrong about what that moment meant to the country as a whole, because the rhetoric has not tamped down. It has only gone up. And I'm really disappointed in the president as well. And that might even be putting it light. I'm actually, it's very cruel what he did.
I'm angry with him. You know, I think I know why there was such disillusion between the two groups. And it's become down to a personal level now. Back, say, 40, 50 years ago, the Republicans and the Democrats had a similar view of America. They just had a different thought of how to get there. That view was Ronald Reagan's shining city on the hill, that we were world leaders economically and militarily and economically. And now it seems like our view of America is not divergent anymore. The Republicans and conservatives still believe in the shining city on the hill, and the liberals want to take it in a totally different direction. So there is no more room for compromise. That's why it's getting so ugly, because we have different views of where this country wants to go, whereas before we didn't. We just had a different thought of how to get there. And my view of where this country needs to go is much more in line with Donald Trump than it was with Rob Reiner. But when I read about Rob Reiner this morning, my heart felt pain.
Sick. Yep. No doubt about it. John, that's a great call. Please call back anytime. I really enjoyed that conversation with you, my friend. Thank you. 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0WJR. We'll take more of your calls regarding the president's statement on Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle. Completely terrible, disgusting statement that the president had. I don't care how bad of a opposition force that Rob Reiner was against the president. It's just really tough to see what the president said about that. We have got to be better. And it should start with the president of the United States. So we'll take more of your phone calls next. Also going to get you the latest into the Michigan investigation that was happening in Ann Arbor. We'll do all of that next. This is JR Afternoon on 760 WJR. Want to put the phone number out for everybody, 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. A couple of different stories in play for you today. We've got the President Trump statement on Rob Reiner, which was completely despicable. I spoke in hour number one. It was a great conversation with Rabbi Asher Lopatan, the community relations director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Ann Arbor. Just the rise in anti-Semitism What an incredible conversation it was with him. I invite everybody to go back, WJR.com or the WJR free mobile app. That'll be podcasted, and you can go ahead and listen to that. Talk to Dan Miller as well, Lions play-by-play man, and of course, Fox 2 sports director, about the Lions' loss to the Rams. If you want to touch on any one of those issues, feel free to give us a call, 800-859-0957. One of the stories I've been keeping an eye on is the University of Michigan. They have launched a full investigation into the athletics department's practices and overall culture. Now, this follows the arrest of former head coach Sherrone Moore. He was accused of having an affair with a staff member. Moore now faces charges for home invasion, stalking, and breaking and entering. And the investigation that is going to look into the University of Michigan Athletic Department is going to be handled by Jenner and Block. It is a Chicago-based law firm that has done business with the school in recent years. So where that goes from here, we'll see. But I will say this. As a University of Michigan alum, a proud University of Michigan alum, who's in charge over there? I am completely grossed out by everything happening at U of M right now. And I'm just wondering, who in the world is in charge? How the head coach, the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines, the situation can unfold the way it did a week ago. And there have been crickets from anybody over there in Ann Arbor. A canned statement from the president, a statement from the athletic director. These highly technical legalese, probably press releases to the statement. Can somebody address the people? Can somebody address the media and make a public statement? Maybe answer some questions. Who knew what and when? And if you can't, then why can't you? Forget about an internal investigation, because this is an internal investigation. I don't care if it's done by an outside law firm or not. But is anybody in Ann Arbor? We claim to be the leaders and best. Michigan men. You're a Michigan man. Where are all the Michigan men out there? Where all are the Michigan people? I mean, Bueller. Seriously, can somebody talk to the fan base? Can somebody come out and show some leadership? Aren't we leaders? Aren't we leaders in best? I am so disgusted by what's happening in Ann Arbor. And, you know, it's so funny because the University of Michigan, the only thing that can stop the University of Michigan is Michigan itself, by the way. The amount of infighting, the struggle for power at that university is insane. It should be about the students. It should be about the student athletes. But really, in my opinion, it's just about who gets the power, who has more power than the next person. That's really what it seems to be about. And how we can be this far along after the public embarrassment of the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines and not one person in Ann Arbor, the quote-unquote leaders and best. Nobody can lead. Nobody can stand up before a podium in front of a microphone and say what happened or what's not going to happen again or validate how the fans are feeling. It's crazy to me that nobody's had a press conference yet. Ron in Washington, Michigan, you're on 760 WJR. Hi, Ron.
Good afternoon. Yes, I guess my statement is with respect to the firing of the football coach or the issue with the football coach. How long did the U of M know about this? When did they find out? And he was fired because he had relationships with a staff member. What about the other staff member? Didn't she also have a relationship with a staff member?
Well, to be honest with you, Ron, I do not believe he was fired because he had a relationship with the staff member. I believe he was fired because of his reaction to the ending of that relationship. In the days-long period, in the two-day period in which she allegedly broke up with him to where he stalked her allegedly, that is why he was fired, because of how he handled the breakup allegedly.
Okay, I mean, I've heard different things. That it was in his contract that he couldn't have relations with staff members. Then I hear
definitely an embarrassment to the
university. Multitude of things.
No doubt. I mean, it is in your kind. That's why you're fired for cause, because you cannot bring embarrassment or shame to the university, which is a wide range of issues for sure.
Okay, and again, not to downplay what he did, because it was absolutely not correct. Well, what is happening with this the other part of the issue here, the female?
I do not know I do not know anything about her, to be honest with you. I don't anything about her. I don't know if she's employed by the university or not employed by the university. Be honest with you, I couldn't care less, to be honest with you.
I understand. The sadness is that it brought about the shame to U of M and its sports program.
No doubt about it. Ron, thanks so much for the call, my friend. Really appreciate it. But again, I'm totally stunned that nobody in Ann Arbor has had the decency or really the leadership skills to stand up there and say what they believe is happening. Let me get to Larry. Let me bring Larry in real quick. Hey, Larry, how you doing? 760 WJ. Yeah. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you? I'm also an alumnus, and the thing that bothers me is the culture of the school and the leadership. You look at Sissel, you know, President Sissel was let go for the very same thing about 2 years ago, and they have an interim president now, and there was a prevost that was also let go for an involvement with some subordinate. And now you have Sharon Moore. So I think there's something, you have to go to where the leadership is, and I believe it's with the regents. I think that really is where the problem is.
And well, that's part of it for sure. You know, that's part of it, sure. A power struggle within then. Larry, got about less than 30 seconds for you, because I got to get to a break here. But go ahead.
Fine. Well, I mean, I think that somebody's going to have to look at the regents, but, you know, that's a political position, and, you know, who has accountability? The voters do, but, you know, I think the press has some investigation or some investigative reporting to do to really look at the whole program from the regents on down to department chairs to the athletic department. There's a lot of money that goes to the athletic department.
And, no doubt. Larry, the call, but I'm up against it. I got to get to a commercial break. Thanks so much, my friend. We're coming right back. Steve Courtney will join us. 760 WJR. Mitch Album Show coming up top of the hour. In the meantime, my favorite segment of the show each and every day, it's to talk to this guy, Steve Courtney. Steve-O, how you doing, buddy?
My man, Ryan. What's going on, dude?
You, baby.
Yeah, well, we'll... We'll get to the Lions eulogy in just a bit. But I got to remind you that this conversation there, Mr. Ryan, brought to you by the Performance Remodeling Sweepstakes, the $100,000 window of opportunity sweepstakes. Yes, that is a lot of dough. Call 586-540-6000 or visit windowsroofingsiding.com for more details. The Performance Remodeling $100,000 window of opportunity sweepstakes. If you don't mind, sir, let's start with some good news, shall we? Your Detroit Pistons themselves in Boston to face the Celtics. That'll be a 7 o'clock start tonight. Oh, by the way, the Pistons looking for win number 4 in a row. The Pistons right now, third in the Eastern Conference, scoring 119.6 points per game while shooting 48.6%. The teams are meeting for the third time already this season. The Celtics, you may recall, won 117-114 in the last meeting, that on November 26th. Let's give it up for Cade Cunningham, for crying out loud.
Oh,
he's averaging 26.9 points, Ryan, 6.1 boards, 9.1 assists, a steal and a half for the Detroiters. And Duncan Robinson, out of your school there, the former Wolverine, averaging 4 made three-pointers over the last 10 games. Quickly, the Red Wings idle until 7 o'clock tomorrow night, but boy, oh boy, did they have a nice road trip. 4-1-1 on that six-game run away from LCA, coming off the 4-0 blanking of the Blackhawks in the Windy City on Saturday night. Right now, you look at the Atlantic Division, you've got Tampa and the Winged Wheelers right up there with 39 points. Okay, we've delayed it as long as we can. in the City of Angels yesterday, Ryan, it was looking pretty darn good for the Honolulu Blue and Silver until it wasn't. In the first half, they would have a 10-point lead. It would be 7 at halftime. Were you like me, Ryan, watching this thing, knowing fully well what our defensive secondary was like, and you're thinking, boy, can they just rattle Matthew Stafford another half here and get the W? Not to be.
Steve, I thought my prediction of them not losing all the way to the Super Bowl was going to be correct midway through the second quarter.
Well, they did have trouble running the ball. As a matter of fact, that was probably the Achilles heel, because Dan Campbell, Lions offense, relies so much on it. 70 yards total on the ground for Jahmyr Gibbs, just 38. But that being said, the offense on point. Defensively, Stafford ends up throwing for 368 yards, hit Kobe Parkinson for a couple touchdowns. Kyren Williams ran for 2 more. And this Lions defense is, well, let's just put our cards on the table, just not very good at all.
I'm more disappointed, Steve, with their defensive line than anything. Stafford had all day to throw that football yesterday. And, you know, when you've got Hutchinson, when you've got McNeil, and you've got DJ Reader, you burn a first-round pick on a defensive tackle. You know, if there's one thing, and I'm not ready to write a post-moratorium on them just yet, because I still think good things ahead for the Detroit Lions. I'm one of the sickos that does. I think you can look at Brad Holmes and his lack of making an impact defensively in the offseason, or at the, well, not so much at the trade deadline, but certainly in the offseason, just a lackadaisical approach to how he handled the other defensive end spot opposite Aiden, and really just a lack of defensive help at all.
Well, you take a look at the pick from Hutch, and you're thinking at that point, okay, this is looking pretty good. By the way, it was his fifth career interception that ties Larry Hand for the most interceptions by a D lineman in franchise history. But there were some issues offensively, and I agree with you with what's going on the defensive side. Is Brad Holmes now second guessing his inability to get a pass rusher at the trade deadline, because he had one sack yesterday, and we were talking about it last Friday. They had 5 sacks against Dak Prescott in that win over the Cowboys. If you didn't pressure Matthew Stafford with the arsenal that he has, you were looking for trouble. Then they end up losing. Davante Adams goes down with that hamstring, and then Puka Nacua, he wasn't 100% either. But by then, the damage had already been done. But you take a look at what the Lions were able to do in third down efficiency. It has been the Achilles heel, I think, with this offense throughout. 5 of 14 in that department. Then you look at what the Rams did, Ryan. They had 9 third downs all game long.
Yeah. And 1 penalty, by the way. Steve, I will say, just coming up here to wrap it up, I will say I do still believe that this football team is alive until there's a fork in them. And I don't think there's a fork in them just yet. I think somehow, some way, they get into the playoffs, and there is no team in the NFC that I do not believe that they can beat. So I am still a high on the Lions. People might just think I could have ended that statement at high, but nonetheless, they're going to be okay.
34% chance as we're having this conversation. Up next will be the Steelers coming up Sunday at beautiful Ford Field. You can scout them tonight. They are hosting the Miami Dolphins. And look at the Steelers. They're 7-6, but they're on top of the very weak AFC North.
No doubt about it. Steve, thanks so much, buddy. Thanks to everybody back at the station and to you for listening. The Mitch Albom Show is next on 760 WJR.